White Rocket Entertainment.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
And welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, and now to White Rocket TV, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined by my semi-regular co-host on this show and my regular co-host on the AU Wishbone Show, John Ringer. Welcome aboard again, John.
Thanks for having me, Van. I'm always excited to be here.
Well, it's fun to get a chance to talk to you about other stuff besides football. You know, I mean, we always have a great time in our weekly slash biweekly show talking about that. But there's lots of other things that you and I are both interested in. And so on this program, we get to talk about many other things. So tonight we're going to talk about the New Hampshire primary. Wait a minute. No, that's not it. Aren't we talking about the New Hampshire primaries tonight?
We are not talking about a breakdown of the New Hampshire primaries and the Iowa caucus data. We're talking
we could.
We're both political science majors, but we're going to talk about books.
Right. We're not going to talk about. I know one thing we're not going to talk about. We're not going to talk about the Super Bowl.
No.
No. Let me just point out, by the way, I am wearing for the occasion of talking about cool books, since there's a really cool book that you and I did a show about a year ago or so, a year and a half ago, which is soon going to be a major motion picture from Steven Spielberg. Can't wait. And that is Ready Player One. So here's my cool Ready Player One with spoilers. My t-shirt has spoilers on it. How cool is that? Shoto.
Don't Daito. Look at the book. Don't look at the shirt if you haven't read the book.
Artemis and Parzival. High scores. And there's keys. I wonder what those keys could be for. But anyway, this, John, is our 89th episode, and it's our first video episode where I actually have a guest. I did a two-part video episode last week because we were having technical difficulties getting the whole connection between us established. But we're finally on in video form, and our topic this episode is: what are you reading? So what John and I thought we would do is just kind of bounce back and forth. We've done this with movies that we like and stuff like that. We did it with Bond villains, which is a really fun episode, I thought. And just kind of bounce back and forth some cool stuff now or have read in the fairly recent past. Is that not your understanding of what we're going to do?
It works for me.
So we're going to just talk about, you know, stuff we're reading, stuff we like, recommendations for you guys, some reviews, maybe some stuff to keep away from, and just basically an hour of fun book talk here. Also, and I want to mention this up front, and I'll try to catch it again before we're done. Speaking of books, there are organizations that do awards. There's probably more than that, but there's two that I know of that do awards for the pulp writer and artist community and publisher community. That is the New Pulp Awards, which are presented at, used to be at Pulp Arc in Arkansas, but now it's another been out that way. The nominees for that one just came out. And there's also the Pulp Factory Awards, which are presented by a sort of professional group. They're more like, it's kind of like the Hugos versus the Nebulas in a way. So the New Pulp Awards are more like the Hugos, where it's a bigger crowd and anybody can vote if you participate. The Nebulas is more like the Academy Awards. It's more of a professional. That's the Pulp Art. I mean, that's the
Pulp Factory.
Pulp Factory, right. That's the one that Legion 3 Kings of Oblivion won best novel last year. I was so excited. And by the way, John, you know what your connection to that book is, don't you?
It's dedicated.
The one that won the award. It is dedicated to you. That's right. It says on the front page, in the grim darkness of the far future, there is only war. Eagle. Borrowing from Warhammer 40,000 here. All right. So anyway, the nominees are out for the New Pulp Award. And my most recent novel, Baranak, Storming the Gates, probably the world's first space opera in which the protagonists spend most of the book on horseback. It has been nominated for Best Novel. It is on the short list of like 10 nominees. So I'm honored. I'm thrilled. And I was so excited Legion 3 won, but this book is very near and dear to my heart because it is very much sort of my Roger Zelazny tribute. I just channeled Zelazny in this book, and I really, it means a lot to me going back to stuff that I was reading back even in early in high school. You read the Amber stuff, haven't you?
Sure. Yeah. All my friends and I read that stuff in high school. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, okay. I'll tell you a bit later on if I remember. Well, if you do want to vote, the easiest way to vote, anybody can vote in those awards. White organization here, White Rocket, has three nominations. One is my book, but the other is Mark Williams, an artist that works for White Rocket, with White Rocket sometime, is nominated for Best Artist. And which is awesome. I hope he wins. And also, this cover is nominated, is one of the nominees for Best Cover. So I'm very excited about that. So three, White Rocket swept every award that we were nominated in last year. There's five at the Pulp Factory, and White Rocket was nominated in four and won all four.
Nice.
Not bad. So, okay, let's, and so if you want, and so I'm sorry, if you want to vote, I mean to get onto the stuff, but I keep leaving things out. So if you do want to vote, just go. You can go to my blog site, and I posted a link. I posted the ballot and all the information you need to vote there. It's the easiest way. So just go to plexico.blogspot.com, plexico.blogspot.com. And it's right there at the top is the link and all the information about voting if you want to vote. And I hope you'll vote for Baranak. Okay, and for Mark Williams. Let me see. What do you have first? I've talked enough. What do you have first that you want to throw out there as a cool book to talk about?
Well, I thought first, before we got into the deep end of the science fiction pool, I thought we'd start with some more regular kind of fiction that people like Mike might enjoy. And I know one of the ones you and I both enjoy, historical fiction. And so one of the series I've spent the last year reading was the Richard Sharpe series by Bernard Cornwell. And it's very good. He's writes excellent historical fiction if you like that stuff. I've just finished his latest book in the Saxon Chronicles, which is kind of the Saxons are fighting back against the Danes who are taking over England in the Dark Ages. But the Richard Sharpe series is this Napoleonic warfare series. It's very, 20 books, 25. It's very good. And it's really, if you enjoy that time period and military history in that time period, it's very well done. There's a lot of good information in it, and it's just good writing. He's a good writer. So I would say that's something you could easily pick up and, you could spend a good while grinding through those. And again, it's not deep. It's not literature. It's entertaining writing and a really good historical information about different battles. He's in India. He's in Portugal. He's in Spain, different places. So that part's really good.
There's several things we could say about that. One is that Sean, did you mention just now Sean Bean did the, based on a series of TV movies. They're pretty good.
I have not watched any of those.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. I've got a bunch of them on video. I can't remember if I got them. I probably got them on DVD from Netflix. But they're out there, but Sean Bean, it's like the only thing Sean Bean has ever done where he doesn't die at the end.
Of the first one.
Right. He has to come back for the next one. So he's like, you could just see Sean Bean going, a series? That means I get to come back. So, yeah, Sean Bean, he's really good, though, is sharp. It's good to see him playing a good guy. He's a very likable villain. And so it's cool to see him be the hero. And they do a really good job in those. They're basically kind of like, hour and a half long TV movies that the BBC did or somebody. And they go from the early 80s up into the 90s. But anyway, yeah, I've read a couple of Cornwell. There's a Cornwell book about Agincourt that I've got. Mm-hmm. I need to read. There's a couple of others. The other thing I'd mention along those lines, speaking of Sharp, and by the way, the one thing that bothers me about those and about that whole those stories is that a lot of British literature, and I'm going to talk about some too, but a lot of British literature gets hung up on the whole class struggle, you know, this class versus that class, the rich and the poor, the aristocrats and the commoners. And the Sharp stuff does kind of get hung up on that a bit, where it always kind of goes back to the same thing. And Dan Abnett does a lot of that with Gaunt's Ghosts. Gaunt's Ghosts are a lot of Richard Sharp in outer space, okay, in the Warhammer universe. And what that is Sharp is a more of a commoner who gets promoted up. Well, see, that makes tension because the other men around him have to look up to him even though he's one of them technically. So they resent him for that. And then the officers, who are all aristocrats, look down at him even though he's an officer because he's not one of them. So he's kind of trapped in the middle. And that's what I think, you know, that's in small doses. I like that. But sometimes that gets overdone. And I feel like all of British, I mean, Harry Potter was kind of like that in a way. It was, you know, Harry got jumped up because he was this magical wizard boy, you know. Ooh, you know, so I don't know. I have a low tolerance for much more class warfare based British fiction, but Cornwell definitely does it right. Now, I'll tell you about an alternative or something in addition to that that doesn't really go into that as much, and that is the Master and Commander series. Okay, Patrick O'Brien wrote 20 of these plus an unfinished 21 that I've got in somewhere around here. But as you can see, Russell Crowe and Paul Bettany did the movie version, which is one of my all-time favorite movies, top five movie. We talked about it back, I guess, you know, when we did our movies episode. But the books are fantastic. And I always say they are basically Star Trek during the Napoleonic Wars. Aubrey is Kirk, and Dr. Maturin is kind of Dr. McCoy and Spock at the same time. Kind of the intellectual weirdo who's also the doctor, you know, but he's best buddies with the captain. And so they travel around the different places all over the Mediterranean, all over the Atlantic, the Pacific, Brazil, you know, all these different places, and have adventures during the Napoleonic Wars. And they are written almost as if they were found in a chest where they'd been preserved as actual diaries of that time. O'Brien basically was like a time traveler who got lost in the 20th century and wrote what he, to him, were like contemporary novels. And to us, they just read like, I don't know, like they were written, you know, 200 years ago and had just gotten discovered. So have you ever read any of the O'Brien stuff?
I have read a few of those, and I do like them.
Yeah. I got on a roll like that. And the same thing with the Parker series I'm going to mention, which is when both authors are dead. And so when I got up to the point where I knew I was getting close to the end, I kind of slowed down because I didn't want it to end, right? I knew there'd never be any more. But once you lose that momentum and you start reading other things, right?
Yeah, it's bad. You need to just drive to the end and then start something else. But I know how you feel. Yeah. It's tough to come into the end of a good series, but would you rather have that? Or would you rather have an author who's in the middle of a big series and it's going to be a long time before the next book comes out?
And maybe die.
I didn't go there. But, I mean, there's plenty of authors I don't think are going to die, but they're still in the middle of series that I care about. So, right. Just throw out some other regular fiction stuff I read recently that was really good. I know we talked about not doing it, but I went and read The Girl in the Spider's Web by the guy who is not Stieg Larsson. And?
Got it. Oh, I haven't started it yet. I got it for Christmas. I'm going to read it soon. I'm just saying. So go ahead.
I'm 100% going to spoil it for you.
All right, here we go.
No, he's not Stieg Larsson, and the writing is not as good. The characters are there, and you're interested in them, and you care about them because it's Elizabeth Salander. but the writing is not as good.
Yeah.
So
she is an amazing character, though. I think she's one of the best fictional characters that's been created in the last, what, 20 years, 30 years?
Absolutely. It's outstanding. Really, really, really interesting and enjoyable character.
Very unique.
Yes. Very unique.
And touches on a lot of women's issues. I mean, and by women's issues, I mean issues we should all be concerned with, obviously, but they're issues that involve women. And I like that because I like that she comes across as somebody who has been a victim in a lot of ways, but is so self-empowering. You know, she finds ways to turn the tables so often on, particularly on men. I mean, that's, you remember the name of the first book was Men Who Hate Women. Mm-hmm. That was the title. They changed it to The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo for, you know, global publication, but it was Men Who Hate Women. I mean, that, and did we, I don't remember if we talked about it before. Did you see the Swedish movies and the American movie?
I've seen the American movie. I've not watched the Swedish ones.
Okay. Yeah. I love the American one. I like the Swedish ones in some ways, but the Swedish ones are really good and you get the whole story. I don't think they're ever going to do the other, they're ever going to do an American version of the other two. It just disappoints me.
It is disappointing.
It just didn't do well enough, you know?
Sure. I mean, it was popular, but it wasn't like blockbuster popular. So,
right. All right. What else you got?
Some other stuff. It's much more on the lighter end, easy reading. I mean, not easy reading, but entertaining and not deep in the spectrum. I read all the Jack Reacher books by Lee Child, and they're more in the, you know, mindless fluff. You know, very formulaic. You know it's going to happen, but they're still entertaining. And they're a lot like the Sharp books in that you know how it's going to end, where, you know, at the end of the book, the hero is going to end up beating somebody with a club. but they're entertaining, and so I just enjoy them. They're, you know, nice, fun, easy things to read. And so that's something I've been you know, every time one of those comes out, I read it. I've been through all of those. And the other thing I read recently that my son turned me on to is Brandon Sanderson wrote a young adult superhero series, which is really good. And I recommend it. And the titles are like Steelheart, Mitosis, and Firefight. And the next book comes out this month, and it's called I can't remember, but it comes out this month, the next Brandon Sanderson book, and it is excellent. It's worth reading.
Are they anywhere near, you know?
They're more young adult oriented, I would say. I mean, it's more of do you know what I'm saying? I think yours are more serious.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah. Mine are really aimed at like young adult. Well, I mean young adult, but I mean like 18, 19, 20, you know.
Yes.
You can go younger than that, but, you know, I get it. I totally get it. I always have a hard time trying to pigeonhole, especially my stuff.
Yeah.
Because I intentionally leave out anything that could offend, you know, younger people. I want anybody to get to read it. I wanted my grandmother to get to read it, you know. But so I don't put a lot of, you know, especially the Sentinels. I don't put any bad language or anything in there, really. And I think maybe like one time, I think the big shocking thing at the end of this book actually was when Ultra says, "I told him to go to hell." But that was like the big whoa moment, you know. So. Okay, so you mentioned Jack Reacher. All right. I've read several Reacher books, and I've listened on audio to some. And yeah, let's put it this way. If you folks out there, if all you know of Jack Reacher is the Tom Cruise movie, Jack Reacher is the exact physical dimensions of Cam Newton. So Cruise was not ideal physically at all to play him in the movie, but he gets the attitude right, I think. I mean, he does a good job mentally and with the, you know, have you seen the movie?
Oh yeah, it's actually pretty well done, I think. And you're right. He comes across the confidence in the dialogue and kind of the way that Reacher just like, oh yeah, I'm going to take your car and keep going. So yeah, no, he captures that part pretty well. And the movie wouldn't have got made without Cruise saying, let's do it. So
right,
it's tough to complain about the casting.
That's the best thing to me about Jack Reacher in terms of the movies, the books, anything part is his attitude, is his confidence. He really is like the lone gunslinger. I mean, that's kind of the way that Child writes him. He's like, he's the gunslinger that walks into town and solves the problem, saves the school marm, you know, from the evil land baron. He's a Western character set in modern times. I mean, Child has said that he's a knight, you know, because Child is British. And he has said that he's basically riding like a knight errant, wandering around. If he's grown in a samurai with no master, you know, every culture has this character that is the roaming hero with no master and no place to go, the rebel without a cause, you know, the samurai without a master, that kind of thing. Every culture's got something like that. So it makes sense that in America, that character would either be a cowboy in the Old West, and we've had lots of movies and stories like that, right? Clint Eastwood played him a million times, or he would be what he is in these, which contemporary, which is a veteran, a soldier, a retired soldier who just sort of wanders around, no real home because he's wandered, you know, he's been lived all over the place as a military brat, basically, right?
He's homeless by choice. That's one of the great things about the book is he doesn't own anything that ties him down. He has a toothbrush. That's basically it. So he literally buys new clothes and throws the old ones away.
He never even does laundry. He throws his clothes away.
Mm-hmm. And he so he just travels the country and does whatever he wants to do. And at one of the later books, somebody calls him Sherlock Homeless, which I think is pretty good.
That's awesome. I hadn't heard that. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll say this about the Jack Reacher books. I'll kind of give you a summary judgment of mine, and then you tell me what you think, okay? I've read several, and I've listened to several others, and I think that there's parts of them that I really like. It's why I've kept, you know, going. There have been some of the stories that I thought were particularly good. But overall, when it's done, it's like cotton candy. You're just like, that was that. You know, I didn't really take much out of them.
Oh, 100%.
Plus they're so formulaic, you know. I mean, the same thing happens in almost every one of them. And it's amazing how many small towns in the Midwest have 35-year-old, gorgeous, you know, divorced or widowed women that really need some handsome stranger to wander into town and make sweet love to them and kill the bad guy.
Well, and the other thing, they are very formulaic and they are kind of cotton candy, but sometimes you need that. I mean, I read serious literature too. You know, I read that terrible Jonathan Franzen book that came out, Purity, and I read All the Light We Cannot See and all that kind of stuff. But sometimes you need something like this, a Jack Reacher book, something light that doesn't have any serious stuff to it, and that's fine. So.
Right. Yeah, that it just made me think. You know what movie is as much of a Jack Reacher movie as Jack Reacher was?
What?
Roadhouse. Patrick Swayze was an early Jack Reacher character, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of can't you see? I mean, he comes into town. He gets a job as a bouncer. You know, he cleans up the town. He has the blonde chick. You know, the other women are falling for him, and then he rolls out of town. I mean, Roadhouse was absolutely a Jack. Yeah. So if you haven't seen Jack Reacher and you haven't read any of the books, if you like Roadhouse, then that's kind of, except instead of Patrick Swayze, he's a big Marine, or was he Army Marine? What is he?
He's Army.
Army. That's right. Okay. Along those lines, let me bring up another one. I got a couple of things here. I have been reading a lot of crime fiction the last few years, not just the Swedish variety. I do like, I think that there's something particularly intriguing about the Scandinavian crime fiction. I'll go ahead and mention that first, because we talked about Stieg Larsson and David Longerkrantz, who's the guy that wrote the new one. Okay. So we've talked about the famous, you know, Swedish crime fiction, but let me point out a couple of other Scandinavian-based crime fiction series that folks might want to know about. Because I like the fact that you get a good detective mystery murder crime story, but it's in a locale that's a little less familiar to us, right? So you're learning about, you know, Norway, you're learning about Sweden, you're learning about these places that I didn't know a whole lot about other than superficialities, right? So first, I'm going to mention Henning Mankell's, wow, this one really glares, Henning Mankell's Wallander. Okay, there's Henning Mankell. He just passed away a few months ago, which was very sad. But Henning Mankell, and as you can see, it's really glary, but it's Wallander is the series, the detective, and it's a major TV series from Masterpiece Mystery. Kenneth Branagh, love Kenneth Branagh. He's been in everything as an actor. He also directed Thor, mm-hmm. right? You're familiar with Branagh, right?
Sure.
Emma Thompson's ex-husband, et cetera, et cetera. Yes. Okay. He plays the detective Wallander in this BBC PBS production where they've been going through and doing like three of the novels every year. And the final season is coming out soon where they're going to do the last two or three books. And this is the very first one. It's so glary you can't even see it. Here's the second one, which should be, yeah, it shows up a lot better, The Dogs of Riga. That's a good one. John, you would love this in particular, you and I having interest in like the old Cold War and the Soviet Union and everything. This one actually takes place at the end of the Cold War, around 1990, as the Soviet Union is collapsing and Eastern European countries are, the communist regimes are falling. And in this book, they find a body in like a little, like a raft floating off the coast of Sweden, and they track it having come from Riga, Latvia. Mm-hmm. And so Wallander goes as a representative of the Swedish police force to Latvia to help the Latvian police force to investigate. And you got all these kind of like former communist, you know, bad guys lurking in the government and the military and the secret police. You can totally visualize this, right?
Sure.
And so Wallander's like in the middle of like a dozen former communist secret police guys who are like, Mr. Swedish detective man, sure, we help you. So this is a really fun story. And they did do Branagh did an adaptation of this. It ran like two episodes a couple of years ago. So you can find these on Netflix or, you know, DVD or whatever. They are really good. And I really like the Wallander series. They're so popular. It's set coast of southern Sweden. And they like the town makes all their money now from people all over the world coming to visit that town, like they think that Wallander actually lives there, you know? They do tours and they like, here's where the police station is where Wallander would have worked if he was real, you know, and here's where his house would be if it was real, you know. And so it's just so cool. All right, so that's Wallander. There's also, now I'm going to try to pronounce this the way you're supposed to. It looks like Joe Nesbo, but it's Jot Nesbo, something like that, right? He's from Norway. There he is, Joe. And these are even more critically acclaimed now than the other two we've talked about. This is the thing right now in sort of European crime fiction from Norway. This is the first one called The Bat. I have to say what the detective's name is, don't I? In Norwegian, it's Harry Ole, but when you look at it, it's Harry Hole.
Sorry.
Yes.
Yes.
His name is Harry.
We're 10.
Yeah. I mean, I picked it up. I'm like, oh, I got to read something with Harry Hole as a main character. But it is really interesting. I mean, that aside, you know, somebody surely at his publisher in Norway should have said, you know, y'all, just in case this ever breaks big in the States, maybe we should name him something like Jones or Svensson. But these are really fun, though. Let me quickly say, The cool thing about Wallander is that he's an older guy. He's nearing retirement. Okay. He's starting to experience a little bit of, you know, dementia and stuff. His father is, who's played by the great David Warner, is having mental problems. Wallander is always trying to lose weight, but then he runs and pigs out and everything. He has all the sort of, you know, human weaknesses that we all have. And he's dealing with them while trying to solve these really big murders as Sweden is dealing with a post-Cold War world. So those are really interesting in that way. The Nesbo books are interesting in that he has even more problems. Harry is like an alcoholic. He's been in trouble constantly with the police force, but somehow he always manages to be like the one guy that can solve the crime. So I really recommend those. And now let me back. It's called Los Angeles. Have you read any Michael Connelly?
The Lincoln Lawyer?
Yeah, and Bosch.
I haven't read any Bosch. I read the Lincoln Lawyer stuff.
All of them?
I mean, how many are there?
Like five.
Yeah, I read maybe three.
Okay. I do like the Lincoln Lawyer better than Bosch, or at least I did. But let me put it this way. All right, so I knew Bosch was out there, and I listened to a couple on audio, the newer ones, but I didn't really know much about the character. And it was so far along in the going on, I'm like, okay, this is fun. So I read the Lincoln Lawyer. I saw the movie, the McConaughey movie. Really good adaptation. Love that Michael McConaughey movie. And here's the Lincoln Lawyer. Bosch, I didn't really like until the TV show. You know, Amazon did their own 10-episode, I guess, series last year. And I just watched it a couple of months ago. Titus Welliver plays Harry Bosch. And he's so good. You know, he's almost like a mellow Dirty Harry in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. The way he plays him is really fun. He's like the cop that everybody, he's like the lone wolf on the outs. You know, the chief doesn't like him. Nobody likes him. You know, nobody wants to be his partner and all that. But he's out there, you know, determined to solve the case. And so I like Titus Welliver so much in that role that I went back and I picked up, I mentioned this thing on the previous episode, I picked up The Black Ice, which is the second one. The first one just didn't sound that interesting, but the second one, this was really good. So I know I've talked about this on a previous episode. I just wanted to see what you thought about Connelly. The Bosch stuff, I thought it was going to be, and I picked up Concrete Blonde, the third one to read next. So even though it's domestic and it's not quite as interesting as Sweden and Norway and all that, I do enjoy them. And this is not a spoiler because they give it away in like the first book. In both series, you find out that Bosch and Mickey Haller, the Lincoln Lawyer, are half brothers. So, and they both have teenage daughters, you know, and so there's stuff that pulls them together. But then Bosch just can't stand a defense attorney, right? Because Bosch's job is he's obsessing over tracking down criminals, and he looks at Mickey as the kind of guy whose job is he's done all the work of tracking them down, you know. So professionally, they hate each other, but personally, they get along and their daughters are roommates, you know, in college and stuff. And so it's a really neat character dynamic there. So
cool.
All right. So there's my part of my crime. I got one more crime thing to mention, but I'll do it in a minute. It's a different medium. What do you got next?
The next thing I want to talk about is a little bit ventured, not all the way into science fiction, but kind of heading in that direction. It's a really good book I read early last year. It's called Station 11 by Emily St. Mandel. And I think okay. I told you about this. I don't know if you've read it, but it is excellent. And if you're looking for something to read, even if you don't care about science fiction, this is a book you should go get and read because it is spectacular. And the premise is that it's most of the book is set in a post-apocalyptic world where there was like a super virus that wiped everybody out. And there is a troupe of artists that goes around and performs to keep art alive, basically. And one of the things they perform is King Lear. And so there's these constant back and forth, like flashbacks to before things went bad and then after. And there's this famous artist who died on stage performing King Lear. And that was the night that like the plague started, basically. And so there's all these connections in his life, people he knew or things he did that end up connecting to these people in this post-apocalyptic world in these kind of strange and interesting ways. And it's really, really well written and well done. I highly recommend it.
So tell us again the name and the title of the author.
It's Station 11 by Emily St. Mandel. Maybe St. John Mandel.
Okay, that sounds really interesting. I'm all over that.
I know it's like the Shakespeare angle got you, I think.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I love, you know, when I always talk about my influences besides Zelazny and some of these other science fiction writers, I mean, honestly, there's probably more pure Shakespeare. I don't mean that in like, I write like Shakespeare. I just mean I steal from Shakespeare directly more than any other probably single source. I mean, there's a bunch of lines and turns of phrase that I've used in almost every book that if you read Shakespeare front to back, you'd be like, oh, that's where that came from. So that is cool. I'm totally going to check that out. One of the crime thing, but like I say, it's a different medium. Now, well, I've mentioned on previous shows, Parker, this is the first book, The Hunter, right? It became Point Blank with Lee Marvin movie. And then it became Payback with Mel Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
It's been done at least twice. And then the same character, Parker, is Jason Statham's character in Parker that came out like 2 years ago. But it's a later book. It's like the one where they rob a place in Florida. But I wanted to mention that Darwin Cook has been doing like one every 2 years or so these nice hardcover graphic novels, literally graphic novels of the Parker series. And so here's the entire adaptation of The Hunter. And see, they're done in black and white with one type of tone of color. So like this one has got kind of a grayish blue as its color. This is a guy that's done a lot. He did Justice League, The New Frontier, which was like a Justice League back in the JFK era. You know, he's got a very of a throwback art style, you see. But it really works for Parker. So this is the first one, The Hunter. And then there's Donald Westlake, who was Richard Stark back there on the back cover. And there's Hart. And he's done all the way through. The most recent one is so awesome. He just did last year, I guess, did Slayground, which is one of the later ones. And this is the one where these other bad guys, because Parker's a bad guy, they chase him into a shut down amusement park. It's like closed for the winter. And so all these bad guys are going to come in and try to get Parker, and Parker gets them. It's he has just enough time to rig up the amusement park to become a sleigh ground. So I really recommend those. You can't miss these books, right? It's got the giant Richard Stark's Parker, and then it's got Darwin Cook down here at the bottom as the it's both the adapter and the artist. I mean, I hope he comes out. I think the last one is coming. He's adapting Butcher's Moon, which is a fantastic, the final book in that series before Westlake went on to other things for a long time. So anything else you want to mention? I got two or three more things I'm going to throw out there. So we still got,
I got two or three more things. I got a couple science fiction books, a couple fantasy books I want to mention. On the science fiction side, I went through a phase last year where I was watching Interstellar and read The Martian, and then I went and read some other science fiction stuff that I thought was really good. I wanted to mention Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. It's very a little bit like Interstellar. The world's being destroyed basically, and people need to get off, but we don't have this Interstellar. There's this convenient, wormhole to go through. In this case, there's not. So people have to figure out how to live in our solar system in outer space in a very short amount of time. And so they run around and do that. And I think it's really well done. There's a lot of thought and a lot of good science in there, and it's pretty done. And then I also read, 2023 by Kim Stanley Robinson, which is it's just pretty good science fiction. It's about it's not 20, it's 2320 or something like that. It's like 300 years in the future, and we've basically inhabited the entire solar system. And so people move back and forth between the different planets and stuff and come visit Earth occasionally. And so there's basically a murder on the Pluto. And so these people have to figure out who did it and why. And there's all these interesting factions from different planets and stuff. And that's pretty well done. But Seven Eves, I really recommend if you like science fiction. I think it's very, very well done, very well thought out. A lot of the first part is basically like, you know, imagine a scenario where there's this big disaster coming in like a year. We know it. And we have to get as many people as possible off Earth into space, into habitable, supportable habitats. They got to live for, you know, the rest of, they can't come back to Earth basically. Mm-hmm. So they have to survive for an extended period in outer space. And so they, you know, rush through all of this kind of stuff they would never normally do. And then there's a second part of the book, which happens like, you know, 3,000 years later, 10,000 years later, or something, they come back to Earth.
That's cool. I like when they do stuff like that. I like that.
So that part's well done. And then the other, everybody's read The Martian probably at this point, but if you haven't, you should go read that. It's excellent. And then the last one I want to read, inspired by your T-shirt, is I read Armada by Ernest Cline, which is his newer book, and it's
okay. Yeah. Well, hold on. We got to say, because I was all hepped up to read Armada, and then all the early release word was, oh, he let us down with this one after the first one. So tell the world now, you've read what?
I read it, and Armada is not as good as Ready Player One. I mean, that's an impossibly high bar to jump over, and it's much more of a video game oriented book than a, you know, just kind of general pop culture movies influence book. And it's, you know, if you read Ready Player One, it's pretty predictable what's going to happen in this book. But it's, you know, there's parts of it that are entertaining and that are exciting, but it's not nearly as good, I think, as Ready Player One.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It is kind of a high bar to reach, but I am disappointed because, you know, you wanted something that would really be as fun. That book, I mean, we did, for those that want to hear about Ready Player One, John and I did a whole episode talking about it. I think the first 30 minutes, we didn't really do many spoilers. And then about halfway through, we ripped the lid off and did a bunch of spoilers the rest of the way. So if you haven't read it, if you want to just have your appetite whetted, you can listen to the first 20, 30 minutes of that show. So just scroll back. You know, in fact, I always say the best place to do it, because iTunes doesn't keep all of our episodes more than like the last 20. So you have to go to whiterocketbooks.com, and there's a player, and you click on the little top right corner of the player. Top right corner is a little thing. It doesn't say menu, but it's a little thing. You click on the top right corner, it drops down every episode. You can scroll all the way back to the very beginning. So you can listen to our Ready Player One. That was a fun show, and it's a great, great book. And I'll mention a couple of sci-fi then. I've got three sitting here right here that I want to mention. First, you know, Leviathan Wakes. This is James S.A. Corey, as I called them on Facebook earlier today, the James S.A. Corey Collective, because it's actually two guys, you know, using that name as a pseudonym. But this is very critically acclaimed near future space opera, you know, sort of like solar system level space opera. I thought it was extremely mediocre. I read this book and thought, yeah. And then I heard they were making a TV show out of it. And I have the TV show recorded, but I have not watched more than the first 20 minutes. I found the first 20 minutes of the show to be very slow, but I'm going to go back and give it another chance. I've got it all on my DVR. So have you read any of this, or have you seen the TV show?
I have not.
Okay. Well, it ran on the Sci-Fi Channel. It just wrapped up the first 10 episode season. There's about four or five of these books out now, but it just did not do as much for me as I was expecting that it would. I love, though, Scott Westerfeld today is mostly a young adult author. But for a while there, he was writing some really cool adult space opera. And this is the beginning of a two-parter called, this is called The Risen Empire, Scott Westerfeld, The Risen Empire. And it is absolutely, there's an empire. There's a way for people to have immortality. The emperor is the only one that knows how to do it, I believe, and so he can control. He turns you almost into a zombie in a way. There's a cybernetic kind of Borg enemy that's trying to come in and take over. You know, who's the good guy, who's the bad guy? And you've got this one starship with a kind of cool captain and crew, kind of a Star Trek crowd, in the middle of all this, kind of bouncing back and forth. They got the Borg-type people chasing them. They got the Emperor's people chasing them. And they're all kind of caught in the middle. So this is a really fun story, starting with the Risen Empire. I keep tweeting, and I saw him at Dragon Con, and I keep messaging Scott Westerfeld, write more of this, okay? He's writing a lot of that young adult mutant type stuff, like uglies and pretties and that kind of stuff now. I guess that's where the money is. Write more space opera, because that's really good space opera. Way better than the Leviathan thing, the Corey. Dan Simmons is a fantastic guy. I'm sure you've read some Dan Simmons.
Absolutely.
All right. Probably Hyperion.
I believe so. And I think that one in your hand, maybe.
Okay. This is Ilium. And it's the second part of it is called Olympos. It has the strangest setup I've probably ever tried to describe in a book that I thought was fantastic, which is it's in the far future on a terraformed Mars where the Greek gods are ruling on Mount Olympus, the big volcano Mount Olympus, not the Mount Olympus in Greece. And there are these futuristic robots way out in the deep solar system that are coming back, we don't know exactly why, who quote Shakespeare and Proust and stuff like that maybe. And then there's like these innocent people on Earth that are like all that's left of humanity and don't understand what's happened to humanity. And they're in kind of a Downton Abbey type world. And then the main character is a college professor from the United States who is an expert on Homer and the Iliad. And he's been reborn on this future Mars by the Greek gods to help explain to them everything about themselves. It sounds crazy, but Dan Simmons is so good that he makes that work. He makes it work. And it's a really long book. And then the second volume, which is basically just picks up the same story. It's really about a 1,600 page long book in two 800 page segments. But I promise, if you want a good long read that engulfs you and engrosses you for forever, if you want to see Achilles fight Zeus hand to hand combat while strange alien robots are about to attack, and there's a cannibalistic creature in a space. There's just so much stuff going on. It's crazy. I just got to move on. I can't talk about it no more, but it's a great book. So those are three science fiction things that I wanted to mention. Do you have any others you want to throw out there of any genre before we wrap up?
Just a couple of fantasy books real quick. Over the holidays, I read Jim Butcher's new series, Aeronauts Windless, which is a steampunk based series. If you like fantasy stuff at all and you have not read Jim Butcher's fantasy series, you should 100% go do that. His other fantasy series. But this is excellent. The Cinder Spires is the name of the series, and the first book is called Aeronauts Windless, and it's very good. I like all his stuff. I mean, I love the Dresden Files. I think those are really fun, and I like his fantasy stuff. And this new steampunk thing, and he's I'm excited to see where he goes with it. And then I also read some other stuff recently. I read the Warded Man series by Peter Brett, which is a fantasy series about basically like demons have taken over the world, and people stay inside these like warded cities at nighttime and stuff, and don't go out. And this one guy starts, you know, humans fighting back and stuff. And it's pretty good. I'm enjoying that. It's three books in, and then I've also read a lot of, you were talking about TV series. The Magicians is on now, the Lev Grossman series, which is like, Harry Potter, but if it was like hard rated R, you know, some really disturbing stuff in there, and not for kids at all. The Magicians by Lev Grossman, but a very good series and something really different, very different, very creative. But I'm interested to see where the TV series goes with it. So,
okay. I'll mention one fantasy. It's actually a White Rocket book by David Wright. But actually the cover is by, Mark Williams, who does the covers for a couple of mine. That's, I mentioned earlier, this is called My Brother's Keeper. The series is Galahad's Doom. And the reason I'm mentioning it, not only because it's a White Rocket book, and so you should, of course, check it out, but also because the different thing about this, it's kind of a high fantasy, and it's a sibling rivalry. You got one brother that's on one side in a medieval civil war, and one brother that's on the other. But also, the neat thing is that David put a lot of sort of Christian, like he's got Bible quotations in it, just a lot of Christian values and stuff in it. It's fascinating. I've just never really seen anything like it before. I was really proud that White Rocket got to publish it because, you know, he just did some things with it that you don't really see in a lot of fantasy. And I think that there's probably an audience out there that would really like this. You know, it's kind of like in the same way that maybe the Narnia stuff that C.S. Lewis did, where he incorporated his religious beliefs and everything into the fantasy story. It's kind of like that along those lines. And David has just right about finished the first draft of volume two of this. So it should be out probably sometime later this year. So I'm really looking forward to reading that. I probably get to read it before anybody else does. So that's cool. Yeah. Last thing I'll mention for tonight, and if you have anything else, you can certainly do it, is I've mentioned Dan Abnett before. And I've talked about we did a whole episode on the Horus Heresy. I did it with Josh Reynolds of Black Library. We did a two-part episode. But the other thing that Dan Abnett did, and we had Graham McNeil on this show to talk about his stuff, which was awesome. I think one of the best episodes we ever did was getting Graham McNeil on. That's one of the biggest guests.
That was a really entertaining episode.
Did you get to hear that?
Yes.
Wasn't he awesome? I mean, I just loved hearing his whole, just like how he goes about writing and everything.
It was really well done.
Yeah. Listening to his Scottish accent while he tells it all is pretty cool too, right? I've had two Scottish guys on now because I had Chris Barnes on talking about audiobooks that time. So who else in Scotland can I get to come on the show? But Dan Abnett, who is from actually Maidstone, Kent in the United Kingdom, he is one of the big Black Library writers. He does other stuff too. But I just wanted to mention the Gaunt's Ghost series. I mentioned it earlier in relation to Sharp. It is kind of Sharp in outer space. But these books are so cool because it's basically, in all the Warhammer 40,000 universe, the humans are in a giant empire, but they're at war with these all kind of encroaching aliens and chaos demons, and everything is coming in. And as Josh said that time, he said it's basically the whole universe is 2 minutes to midnight. And so the Gaunt's Ghost series is a very small story in that big universe, but it's basically like Gaunt put together an army from this planet Tanith, and right after they left, bad guys, the whole planet got blown away like Alderaan, and so they're called the First and Only, because there will never be another Tanith army, and so every time one of the Tanith killed in these books, there's fewer and fewer left than there'll ever be, you know. And so somebody asked Abnett, when will you finish the series? And he says, when I run out of ghosts. So, but the last one was Salvation's Reach, which is really cool. They raid a space station that's got a bunch of the enemy on it. And it's like a boarding action and a stealth action and all that. It's just really fun. Like, you know, military more than me. It's when you're down to just like one commander and his immediate men. That's not a battalion, right? That's like a unit or whatever. It's
a company.
Yeah, it's that scale. It's that small scale action. You're not talking about, you know, there'll be stuff in the background of whole infantry and air combat and everything else, ship to ship, but it really focuses on, you know, like a dozen soldiers.
Okay, so even like a platoon or something almost.
Yeah, like a platoon, right. And some of them are really good snipers. Some of them are big, brawly fighters and everything. Some of them are stealth guys, you know, and Gaunt's the charismatic leader that's trying to keep them all together. So it's a really fun series. I really like the Gaunt stuff. This one came out several years ago, and he hasn't done the new one yet. He's had health problems, and he's been writing a lot of the Horus Heresy books, which I guess sell better. So he's, you know, going where the New York Times bestsellers are. But hopefully we'll have a new Gaunt book coming out soon. So, okay, any last books while you have the chance? Throw them out.
No, you said that, and now my mind's go completely blank. So I'm leaning over looking at the bookshelf, and I can't.
What are you reading? What are you reading right now?
You're asking me, and I can't remember the name, but I'm reading this book by this guy, Weeks. I'm Googling it. It's a fantasy series, Brent Weeks, maybe. And I didn't want to bring it up because I haven't decided if I'm in the middle of the first book.
Okay.
Black Prism is the name of the series and the name of this book. And so I'm in the middle of the first book, and I'm trying to decide if I like it or not. I'm not blown away so far. So, it's something new and different, so I'm giving it a shot. And this, like, the gold standard for me for that kind of stuff, like we've talked about this before. I love Patrick Rothfuss. He's probably my favorite. I enjoy George R. R. Martin, but he's driving me crazy a little bit. and I really enjoy Butcher stuff. It's something different I'm trying, but we'll see.
Okay. I'm currently reading The Road to Little Dribbling by Bill Bryson. I love Bryson so much. And I read as much nonfiction now as I do fiction. You know, I'm in my office. I'm currently reading the Lyndon Johnson, the Robert Caro book about Johnson. I'm up to Passage of Power. So I mentioned that in the previous solo episode. So I won't bore you people with that. Okay. Well, as we wrap up, again, if you want to go to plexico.blogspot.com, you can check out the ballot. Just anybody can vote. Just vote once. It tells you how to vote for the New Pulp Awards. And I hope that you will consider me as the author of this book. And I hope you'll consider Mark Williams as the artist, because I think I just love this cover. These two go together. People ask, well, what order do I read them in? I'm like, well, it doesn't really matter, because this one came first. Then I wrote this one, and they're even numbered. 1 and 2, but number 2 is a prequel. So it's like, do you watch Phantom Menace or do you watch Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Jedi, right? So, but
the answer is you ignore Phantom episode 1, 2, 3 and just watch episode 4, 5, and 6.
Right. Well, these are episodes 4, 5, and 6 then, because there don't ignore
them. That's it.
All right. Okay, well, I guess we're going to get on out of here. We're out of time. So that was kind of fun. We kind of dug through our bookcases a little bit and shared some stuff with you. Hopefully you guys will, in the comments down there, feel free in the comments to tell us what you're reading or give us any feedback on the things that we mentioned. And also be sure to subscribe to White Rocket TV if you don't listen to the White Rocket podcast, or if you do. And like the show. Well, of course, like the show, that helps us. And we do our podcast as well. So this will be up on audio in the next couple of days. And as Mira always says with her little sign here, which is almost impossible to read, like and leave awesome comments. Well, you it works for those, you know, Minecraft video people that she watched. So maybe it'll work for us. So, okay. Well, you can, follow us on Twitter. John is at JK Ringer. I'm at Van Allen Plexico. And this, we are the show, the White Rocket Entertainment is at White Rocket Book with no S, White Rocket Book. So it's time for the Rocket to get on out of here for another episode. John, I appreciate you coming on. That was a lot of fun. And we got to come up with another topic. I have one in mind. Well, there's several we can do, but I'm thinking, tell me what you think. I want to talk about James Bond movie opening scenes.
Okay. You think we do a whole podcast out of that?
Yeah. Have you seen Spectre yet? Have you seen Spectre yet?
We could do a podcast about Spectre at some point, yes.
But I mean, have you seen Spectre?
I have not seen Spectre yet. I'm seeing it this weekend. I'm sorry.
The opening scene in Spectre is up there with the best from the entire series.
Okay.
And so when you see it, you'll see why I want to do a show where we kind of, like we did the villains, I want to do the same thing with the opening sequences. Go back and forth. Start with number 24, work our way down to the best opening sequence. I'll do a list of all the opening sequences, and you can rank them, and I'll rank them, and then we'll bounce back and forth like we did with the villains. I thought that was a lot of fun.
I like it.
It's a date. All right. Rocket's going to get on out of here for another week. Check us out on iTunes. And otherwise, we'll see you guys down the road.
Griffin, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.